Well, you know what happens this time of week. It's time to get our view from the north. And today he's actually in the north, as opposed to Kansas City or Phoenix. You can find his work for Comcast Sportsnet, CSNNW.com. Follow along on Twitter. The handle is at Aaron J. Fentress. Kind enough to let me tag along on his ride to the University of Phoenix Stadium Saturday. Welcome in, Aaron Fentress. AF, what's up?
Not a whole lot. What's up with you?
Not much. I feel like it's come down week where it's time to take a breath, sleep at home, not live out of a suitcase, not deal with 77,000 people screaming in your ear. But it's a nice time of year. I want to start with the NBA. This time of year, it's almost like a cliche argument. Who wins the MVP? Sometimes it's not a choice. You got triple-double Westbrook, Harden, Kawhi Leonard. Some are saying LeBron's having the best season of his career. So there's less than a week left. Is there anything that could happen that would change the result if you had a vote? And who would be your top guy right now?
Oh, I'm going to go with Westbrook because he is doing something that hasn't been done since Oscar.
Yep. Well, ever, that most of us knew.
Yeah. Was Oscar legit?
Yeah,
like 9.9 or something.
No, he averaged a triple-double, but being of my age, trust me, it wasn't until Magic in the 80s that I even heard the term triple-double.
Triple-double. Okay.
It, you know, 10 years after Robertson retired.
So I think given what he's doing, and it's not a 20, 10 and 10. It's a 31, 10 and 10.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? So it's like, Is he leading the league in scoring?
You know what?
Gotta be, right?
Yeah, he said.
No, that's averaging 30. Harden's 29.
No,
I'm not doing 30.
No, that's one of the things I said earlier. It's like, it would almost be a shame because we might not see a season like this again.
Right. And the only knock on him, obviously, would be the 5.4 turnovers, which is just a huge number. But Harden is doing the same thing. And, you know, Cleveland's been kind of rough this year, you know, considering they won the championship last year. I mean, obviously, they're still good. They're still contenders. But they have had some serious dry spells and problems and things like that. So that takes a little luster off of LeBron for me. So I'm going to go Westbrook. I think you reward a 31-10-10.
By the way, the Big O's year, 31, 12.5 rebounds, 11.4 assists.
Oh, my God, yeah. So was he MVP?
Wow, that's pretty funny. I don't even know that. You know, they
If you're on reference, you can just go straight to the right and see that year, it should say.
No, the thing is, he, you know, was probably on a crappy team, and he was not the most valuable player that year. I got a sneaking suspicion it was probably Bill Russell or Chamberlain, but that's crazy. That's absolutely crazy. All right, Duck spring football has started, and of course we all know behind track, men and women's basketball and softball, it's the fifth most popular sport at Oregon now. In your piece on CSNNW, interesting stuff, new staff, but mostly the same players. Do you buy there's a competition at quarterback beyond the traditional, you know, all jobs are open for grabs, or could we rest assured, unless there's something bad happens, that it's Justin Herbert?
Yeah, I semi-buy it. I mean, I do believe it's the whole, you know, there's always competition. And I think when you're dealing with a new coaching staff that didn't coach Herbert, and although they watched the film, they didn't really coach him, that, you know, they want to have, you know, fresher eyes on everybody and sort of give everyone a chance. And when you say that, that rejuvenates the guys that got beaten out last year by the true freshmen. I think that's a good thing. And you're hoping that someone pushes them. You know, I mean, that's what you want. It's for him to get better and someone to push him to make him better. And if you can get someone else, whether it's Terry Wilson or Travis Johnson, to push him to the point where you feel like you have two legitimate starters you can win with, then it's all good in the neighborhood, right? I mean, that's what you want. You don't want a mystery behind number one. You want someone who's pushed them. Now, I've made the argument that I don't believe there's been a freshman or sophomore quarterback in the history of the program that could beat out Justin Herbert other than Mariota, maybe.
Wow.
I'm gonna say Mariota as a true freshman against Herbert as a true freshman would be very interesting. And we never saw Mariota do anything as a true freshman because he redshirted
right. With
closed practices. I'm going to assume, since he went on to be a phenom in the Heisman, and the fact that he's a better runner, that he would have beaten out Herbert. So I'm going to say probably Mariota beats him out as true freshman. But I would say Harrington is true freshman, Dan Fouts, Chris Miller, Musgrave, Dennis Dixon, Darren Thomas, Cullen Clemens. None of those guys beat out Herbert as a freshman. So it's difficult for me to believe that Terry Wilson, who was third string and redshirted, and that Travis Johnson, who fell off the map last year, none of those guys could come close to touching Dakota, that they're not going to beat out Herbert, especially after what we saw Herbert do last year. But you open it up, you see what happens. But I think Taggart knows the deal. I think he just wants to see it for himself and make his own decision.
All righty. I think another thing you touched on, you can connect the dot to a studs at linebacker to Oregon's greatest seasons. Wonder it was Kiko, Peter Sermon, Lacumbo, Tony Washington. You asked the question, and it's pertinent. Who changes the game? Who gets the quarterback? Who gives the offense something to think about at that position beyond Troy Dye? Who are the guys even in the mix?
Yeah, it's tough. It's one of the major questions. They have to find playmakers at linebacker. Now, they've got Hodgkins and they've got Swain back, who played a lot last year, but they played a lot on a bad defense, and the linebacker did not perform. So can they elevate their game to become more adequate, or do they need to be replaced by younger guys like Winston or, Sims and Briscoe? If they can go young and those guys are better, then I think we're going to see that happen. But you got to hope the seniors can step up and become better playmakers. But, yeah, it's imperative. They're going to run a 3-4 again, and they have one legitimate linebacker that we know of. Now, Swain came on last year and played decently. But as far as those guys who made an impact and were difference makers, you got one. And you got to find at least one other playmaker and then a really solid one, and then maybe the fourth one can be average. But they've got to dig deep because after this season coming up, you're going to lose those two seniors. You better have guys in place to be ready to play the following year.
No, that's something to keep an eye on. Talking with Aaron Fentress of Comcast Sportsnet. At Oregon, of course, at receiver, you got the no block, no rock theory. But you do got to throw a scare into the defensive coordinator, guys who could do damage downfield. We know the constants are Charles Nelson and Darren Carrington. It seems weird because are they a little light in that area? And who are you looking to maybe fill the bill? I think in your article you said, you know, you need another 3-4 guys.
Yeah. So they went from 3 years of just tremendous depth there to now having two proven guys in Carrington and Nelson. And then behind them you've got two former four-star guys and Dylan Mitchell and Alex Afalole, who have barely played. So obviously from a recruiting standpoint, it's time for those two guys to rise up and give you a big four with some guys at least who came in with high credentials as recruits. But the jury's out on those two. We don't know exactly what they're about yet because they haven't done anything. And then after that, you're looking at walk-ons, you're looking at converted DBs, and you're looking at freshmen. Now, Darian McNeil's in the house, three-star kid they stole from Arizona. Tiger told me the other day that he likes him a lot, that he's got a little bit of Charles and a little bit of DeAnthony, and I'm not quite as fast, but he'll make you miss. He's a guy who could give them some depth, and then they're going to have a bunch of freshmen coming in the fall, and they might need two of those guys to step up. Because as we've seen at Oregon, man, receivers go down.
Yep.
Receivers go down, and it hasn't mattered for the last few years because they've had a ton of depth. So right now, they got to make sure that they fill some holes at receiver because chances are someone's going to get injured and they're going to need someone to step up.
Another X factor you covered, and by the way, you can catch Aaron's five glaring spring questions at CSNNW.com. The new coaching staff, you know, it's not like all the USF guys packed up and came here with Coach Taggart. A couple of his Bulls moved with him. Otherwise, kind of a new mix. What would be the learning curve you have to allow for coaches trying to figure out a new situation, most cases on the other side the country?
Yeah, I think that's going to be a factor their first year because Taggart's worked with two of his guys, and Leavitt worked with Charles Clark, the cornerbacks coach at Colorado. Other than that, you have a bunch of guys who are just getting to know each other. And you're going from a staff where you had guys who've been together for decades to a staff where guys don't even know each other, never met really before, or coached together. And they're, you know, so all the defensive systems are coming in. They have to learn Leavitt's system. All the offensive coaches have to learn Taggart's system. You have two coordinators, and Taggart's going to call the play. So basically, you have three offensive coordinators on offense. That's going to be fascinating. You have three head coaches on the roster, two coordinators and Taggart. So that's going to be interesting. So how everything and your wide receivers coach was offensive coordinator in the NFL. So there's a lot of room for egomania going on there. Now, Taggart said when he put together his staff, he was looking for guys who would buy in. There's some coaches he turned down and decided he didn't want because he didn't feel like they were going to buy into the team concept at the coaching staff level. It's his way or the highway. It's his show. Everyone on staff understands that. So I'm not saying there's going to be a necessarily major conflict or anything like that. But what I'm saying is that there's going to be some growing pains in terms of learning to work together. You know, what happens in the first game where one guy wants to do one thing, one guy wants to do another, and it fails, and you don't have that history behind you to support the confrontation of failure versus success, what might have succeeded or what have you. It'll be interesting to know how that works out. And, last year's staff, especially on defense, there were some problems. You know, I've heard that there are some problems staff-wise in terms of what was going on, from Pelham being demoted to Neil not getting the job, either when Pelham was there or after Pelham got demoted, Hope coming in, and Pelham staying there. I mean, these things happen. This is not something that doesn't happen on coaching staffs, and this is a brand new staff that has to learn each other, so it'll be interesting to see how it all works out.
Yeah, I felt last year was interesting, and we dared them to be worse than 2015, and they pulled it off.
They did.
I'm moving to hoops, talking with Aaron Fentress of Comcast SportsNet. No question, the program under Altman's just at a different level. 5 years in the tournament, Elite Eight, Final Four. So I don't know, from a real blown chance to play for and win the title to, come on, it's the greatest season in history, bar none. What's like the proper evaluation over losing to Carolina? And are they now built to make another run soon? Or is it like, oh man, that one's going to hurt for a while?
Yeah, I mean, I think that hurts, but I think you have to be realistic, man. To me, it was clear Carolina was the better team. The way they disrupted everything Oregon was trying to do with Brooks and Dorsey just took them out of the game with the length and the perimeter and the size inside. And I was surprised it was close. When Carolina got up, 11 and 10 minutes ago or whatever in the second half, I'm thinking, okay, this is over. Now, to Oregon's credit, they fought and they battled back, but I think Carolina sort of gave them some chances to come back as well. And Jordan Bell, if he gets offensive rebound, yes, they have a chance, and everyone laments that. But let's remember, he had two chances in offensive rebounds because of missed free throws.
Right, right, right.
So it's like at some point you have to accept the fact that you can't only look at your own mistake. You have to look at the fact that the other team made a lot of mistakes, and it's far more egregious to miss four free throws than it is to miss two offensive rebounds in my book. And so, yes, they were given a gift. It didn't work out because of the bounce of the ball, because Beeks just bowled his way to get that last offensive rebound like Shaq used to do back in the day. could it have been offensive, over the back foul, what have you? Probably, but you're not going to call that. So I think if you're a Ducks fan, man, just rejoice in the fact that you made the Final Four for the first time in ever. You did it without Chris Boucher, and just hope that two of the big three come back.
That's funny because that's kind of my formula. And that merry trio of Jordan Bell, Dylan Brooks, Tyler Dorsey. So let's end with this, a quick two-parter. If you were Aaron Fentress, college basketball advisor, A, what would you tell each of them to do for next year? And if you were Aaron Fentress, gambler, what would you bet those guys would do?
Ooh, okay.
Go alphabetical. Start with Bell.
I would tell Brooks. Okay. I would tell them all to test it. And that's what's beautiful about the rule that was put in several years ago, because they can test it. So
right.
You all test it. I'd say if you're Brooks, you maybe have done all you can do. You can improve a little bit. You've improved a lot from last year. I think he is who he is. He just had a foot injury. You know, who knows what's going to happen next year. God forbid he came back and blew out his knee. had to miss a year. I say he leaves now and does his thing in the NBA and sees what happens. I think he's going to make a team. I think he's going to be a good reserve off the bench for somebody and be around for a while. And he's not great at many things, but he's good enough at a lot of things. I think he can play in the NBA.
Okay.
So I tell him to go, and my money is on him leaving. I think Dorsey should stay. No doubt in my mind he should stay. He's not projected to go at some draft boards anywhere. I think he got exposed in the championship game by the length of Justin Jackson and Theo Pinson, who just completely took him out of his game. He did do a great job getting on the line. I'll give credit for that. But I think he definitely would come back, especially if Brooks goes. He can come back. Dorsey can come back and average 20 a game. Okay. And plus, I think NBA scouts are going to notice what happened in the championship game and all those mediocre games he had during the regular season more than that little run he had where he was red hot.
Right.
So I think he should come back. And someone told me, though, a soft source, said he thinks that Dorsey's gone.
Wow.
Which I was shocked to hear that. So we'll see if that turns out. So I'm 50-50 on him. Jordan Bell, man, that's a tough one. I would say come back, learn to stick that short jump shot that people just give you to go along with your NBA rebounding and shot blocking ability, and you're a lottery pick. But he could go right now and be a late first round pick. But then he ends up on a really good team, buried on the bench. So I would tell him to come back. I'm gonna say 60-40. He does. If Brooks leaves, it opens up offense for those two, and those two can both elevate their game and probably raise their stock.
Now, real quick on Bell, 6'9", 225, can't shoot outside. Too small for a power forward. He could dunk. He's too small for a power forward. I mean, I'm just confused as to what is.
You mean he's not bulky enough? He's tall enough. Well, I see what you're saying. He's a tweener guy.
Yep.
No doubt. But he's an athletic tweener guy who can fly around and do things. I mean, I don't think he's necessarily a starter. But, you know, if he's in your second unit coming off the bench for 18 minutes a game, he's blocking shots, he's being active and rebounding, I think he can play. And if he can just learn to stick a reasonable distance, you know, that but there were times the team just gave it to him. He just looked to give
yep.
it up.
Yep.
Stick that in people's face, and then he becomes even a better prospect at the NBA level.
All righty. Great stuff as always, my friend. Catch up with his work, csnnw.com, on Twitter, at Aaron J. Fentress. Enjoy your downtime, and we'll catch up with you next week.
Downtime. Spring football's just started. I got to drive to Eugene tomorrow for 10 minutes of media availability. We should talk about that next week.
I take it all back. We'll cover that on Thursday.
All right, man.
Take it easy.